Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is professional horse player Charlie Davis. We'll be talking to Charlie in a few minutes. Both Richard and I have political opinions, of course, but we stay clear of that topic on this show unless a political subject relates to gambling. 4 years ago, Michael Shackelford was my co-host, and he'd regularly bring up updates from InTrade and other betting markets that said who was likely to win. He'd report Obama was ahead, of course, because that's what the market said. But then I get emails from listeners saying Shackelford was un-American because he was reporting Obama was likely to win over Romney. So, because of that, InTrade is now gone. Or maybe another reason. So, Richard, what betting markets are around for Americans to play with? And I warn you, if you say the betting market is predicting Hillary is going to win, we're going to get mail.
No, I was happy to find this week. And initially, I was very excited because you can't. There's nowhere to bet here in the United States. But I found this new market called Predict It, and it is a betting market, much like there was one that in the past that was run by a school. I forgot which school, but you know, it had fairly small limits. This one, the limits on each bet are $850. So I was just happy to see that there was a place where you could make these bets. Now, in looking at it a little bit further, it's not that great. Looks like they take 10% on winning bets, and there's a 5% cash out fee. So if you actually want to bet, you're probably still better off getting a friend and trying to bet through Betfair in the UK. Although Lyman Poker, a friend of the show, pointed out that, you know, it's a good place to go see what the lines should be, and he's often able to make, you know, very big, high EV bets with people at the poker tables, you know, who just want to bet on who their favorite candidate is or whatever, and they have no concept of what the real odds should be. So that there's an idea. You may want to go check out the prices, you know, and then make bets with your drunk uncle.
All right. So we are going to now introduce Charlie Davis, and then we're going to see if he's planning to make any predicted bets with his drunk uncle. So, Charlie, he's a professional handicapper, and he also bets horse racing contests. He was a guest on the show July 14th, 2015, talking about betting horse races in general. If you like what you hear today, it's smart money to go back and listen to the earlier broadcast as well. Today, he's going to be talking mainly about horse racing contests. Charlie Davis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge. All right, Charlie Davis, can you hear us now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can do fine.
Okay, great.
All right, now.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Do you have any drunk uncles you're planning to take advantage of on Predicted or whatever?
No, I try and avoid that as much as possible.
I try to avoid
the drunk uncles and the political getting involved with politics.
All right. Now, when you were on the show 8 months ago, you spoke of two type of handicapping contest, real cash money and mythical money. Please tell us the difference and which one do you like better and why?
Yeah, so the majority of contests right now are mythical money, and that's essentially a $2 win place wager on a horse in each race, and the person with the most mythical dollars in their bankroll at the end wins. Cash tournaments, you start with a bankroll, and there are usually some sorts of limits on what you can bet. Like, for example, you can bet win, place, and exacta, or win, place, show, or exacta trifecta, no pick fours, or something like that. And at the end of the tournament, the person with the most money wins, and they also get to keep all the money they want.
All right, which one do you like better?
The cash. It's not even close for me, because it so much more closely parallels what I do every day, and I have I can just make so much more money that the EV is so much higher in cash tournaments.
And can you see where everybody stands as it's going along?
Sorry, I just had some dogs yelling here. Can you repeat that?
I said, can you see where everybody's bankroll stands as you go along? And are you all required to bet on the same races?
Well, the formats vary. Usually, in most cases, they update the board every half hour or something like that. So you're not required. Usually, in those cases, you can bet, say, 10 or 15 races on X number of cards. So people will be betting all sorts of different races. So to keep it kind of updated, they'll update it on a schedule, a time schedule of some sort. So you'll know every half hour, or you'll know every hour where the leaderboard's at.
And now, like in a blackjack tournament, you know, the last seven hands, you'll see a chip count on every hand. Is there something like that when you get down to the near the end of the round?
Yes, they usually speed it up towards the end of the day. Some even going every single race. The biggest cash tournament there is the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And on that one, you're only betting the races at Santa Anita or wherever the Breeders' Cup is being held. So you're betting one track. So on that contest, they update it after every single race, whether you bet it or not. But on contests where they have multiple tracks going, they do it by time. And then at the end, they, you know, when there's only a few races remaining, usually the California tracks are running, they'll update it after every race.
Now, in a blackjack tournament, often it's a good strategy to bet very small for quite a while and see where the rest of the field, how they fare before you start making moves. Is that similar in horse racing, or?
Yes, definitely. A lot of people, that's not exactly how I play, but a lot of people will bet the minimum bets, because you always have a minimum number of races and a minimum bet per race. So a lot of people will bet their minimum bets on the early races and save their money for the big races that they're interested in right at the end of the day. Some contests even require you to bet half your bankroll on the last race of the card.
That's
a great idea too, because then, you know, if you're aggressive enough and right enough, then you can come from nowhere and win the whole thing.
Huh.
Now,
in fact, that's the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge comes down to the last race every single year.
What tournaments do you play in Vegas, and why do you pick those?
So I play two in Vegas. I play the Horse Players World Series, which is at the Orleans, and I play that every year. It's not the best value tournament. It's a pretty cheap entry fee, but I have a great time. There's a bunch of people there. I get to see a lot of friends. And the day money is really good. So even if you don't have a good day one, you can make money on day two or day three. And so I tend to make some money there and have a great time. The other one I play in much less frequently is the NHC, the National Handicapping Championships. And that's at Treasure Island. And in order to get into that one, you have to qualify. And I don't make much of an attempt to qualify. So if I do well in a cash tournament and I qualify, then I'll go to that one. And if I don't, then I will skip it.
So how do you qualify?
Playing in mythical money tournaments normally, and online. But you have to, if you want to qualify online, you have to play in pretty low value tournaments that I'm not a big fan of. So the only way I'll qualify is when I go to the cash contest that I really like to play in, and they offer them as part of the, you know, top five get an NHC seat. Then that's how I'll qualify. That's how I qualified last year.
And these cash tournaments you're playing online?
No, the cash tournaments are live. So they're at a racetrack or also some casinos, that kind of stuff.
Oh.
Are the tournaments at a racetrack different than a tournament at a casino?
Yeah, I think they are. First of all, the on-track tournaments offer a lot more value. A lot of times there'll be no takeout and at all, and they'll add stuff in. So you're actually going in with, you know, positive expectation. The thing that's a challenge about it is that you have your track specialists. So if it's at Hawthorne, then you have that Chicago guy who plays only Hawthorne and knows those horses like the back of his hand. And it adds a level of, it adds a whole level of challengers that are quite good at that one circuit. So I love on-track tournaments just because I'm a value hound. So they're right up my alley.
Do you travel around and play a number of those?
I do, yeah. It depends on my schedule, and, you know, I have a family and all that. But I try to get to three or four a year. I love the one in Lexington at Keeneland Racetrack. Santa Anita does a lot of good ones. I went to Laurel last year, so... Yeah, I tend to get out and about.
Now, a year ago, you took third place in the National Handicapping Championship at Treasure Island. How big was the field, and how strong is the competition?
Yeah, it was actually just about a month and a half ago. So it wasn't that long ago. There were, I think, 650, 680, something like that, people.
Uh-huh.
Very strong field.
So everybody there had qualified by winning something.
Yeah, everybody qualified. You can't buy your way in. So it's all people that know what they're doing. You don't see many mistakes. I was honored to get third. And the guys ahead of me, one of them is a professional player who's Paul Matisse, he's one of probably the best player I know. And the other guy placed second the year before, so he's obviously quite accomplished contest player. I don't know him as much, but and the whole final table, the top 10 were almost all people I knew and people that have been involved in the game for a while. There was a former champion up there, so it was a pretty tough field, and I was honored to get third.
What was first place worth?
First was 800.
800,000.
Yeah, 800,000. And then mine was 125, so it dropped off pretty seriously after first.
And there's no entry fee, there's just a qualification?
Right, but qualifying is not free. So you're going to spend money to get there.
Well, yeah.
Now, are there players with two or more entries?
Yes, you can have two. They changed that rule a couple of years ago. It used to be you could just have one. Now you can have two, and I actually did have two. The NHC holds four free contests for everybody that's a member, and I won one of those, and then I won the other one in a cash tournament. So I had two entries, actually.
Uh-huh.
So that means you got to almost like two bingo cards. You could make two sets of picks?
Yeah, and it... For me, I find it helps in the big tournaments a lot in the beginning because I can, if I like two big price horses, I can play one on each ticket. And if one hits, then that becomes my primary ticket. Later in the tournament, it was kind of a distraction because I had one ticket that was right there in the top five, practically the whole tournament. And my other one was right on the verge of getting into the next to last cut, which you get means it's the money cut. I just kind of ignored the one that was close to the cut line because I had to focus on my good ticket.
But couldn't you just make the same picks, and
I could have, and that's what I did.
And it wouldn't be that. It wouldn't be that bad,
right? But that ticket needed. That ticket was much further behind my A ticket, so I needed to
take a swing,
take some more swings on that one. And I just didn't have the mental capacity to take swings on that ticket, and then play my top choices on my other ticket. It got me a little flustered.
Now, in most gambling tournaments, people who use the same strategies that they would in the betting in a casino, or in your case, the track, are usually dead money in the tournaments. Is this true in horse racing tournaments too?
Yeah, and there's a lot of frustration from people who are very solid handicappers that can even make money on an annual basis when they come over to tournaments, because in tournaments, yes, you need to be able to pick winners, but it's more important to find value and make sure that if there's a big price with value, that you're playing that horse. And a lot of people say, well, that horse is not the most likely horse to win. Why would I pick him? And so there's a whole level of strategy involved in tournaments where you have to, even if there's not as much value and you wouldn't normally bet the horse, that could be the right tournament play.
And I assume you're able to bring your computer and work with your computer while you're playing, right?
Oh yeah, I couldn't do it without it. You hand me the form and I'm handicapped.
Right.
I need my computer.
Now, what percentage of your picks in a tournament would be the same as your picks if you were at that track that day?
Well, at the NHC, it was well over 90%. I bet a lot of the horses, and I was able to play horses that I wanted to bet. In a typical tournament, in the beginning of the card, I will be betting horses that I will be picking horses in the tournament that I'm betting. As you get down towards the end, where you have to kind of deal with the strategy, where you're at in the leaderboard, how much do you need to move up, then that's where I could deviate from horses I'm betting. Because if I need a horse who's 20-1, but I don't like that any horses that are 20-1, well, then I'm going to have to pick a horse I wouldn't bet.
Now, most gambling tournaments have significant endgame strategies. Now, can you give us, this has to be true in horse racing, you've alluded to as much. Can you give us some examples of how this works?
Yeah. So my best example is from the NHC. So the last seven races, I believe, it's down to 10 people. And those 10 people are the only ones that can win. And it's kind of replicating the final table in the World Series of Poker. The next to last race, I was $64 is the most you can get on any race. That's the cap. So going
the
into
most
the next
to last.
The most
you can bet or the most you can win?
You can win because it's a fictional tournament. So they cap it at 20-1 to win, 10-1 to place.
Oh, wow.
So even if you get a 50-1 shot, you're going to get $64. So knowing that, going into the next to last race, I was over $64 behind the leader. So instead of going for a long shot and trying to catch up a chunk of it, there was a favorite that I really liked in that race. So I bet that horse. He won. It was only a 3-1 shot. So I got about $11, $12. That moved me within $64 of the guy who won it and gave me a shot in the last race to pass him. It also moved me up two spots, which made me about $50,000 just on a 3-1 shot.
Are you limited as to how much you can bet? I mean,
yeah, everybody's betting the same. It's $2 at win place.
Oh, wow. It.
Yeah.
Wow, that really sucks.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I like cash tournaments so much more, because going down to that last race, anybody can win. You know, somebody with $500 left could win if they play a $500 trifecta that plays a lot, you know? So the strategy is much simpler in a mythical format.
Yeah.
Now, in gambling tournaments, each venue has slightly different rules. and these rules change from year to year a little bit. Can you explain some of the differences in the rules that you would see, like, say, between New Orleans and Treasure Island in your two cases, or any of the two tracks you mentioned?
Yeah, so one of the biggest differences is mandatory versus optional races. And every contest will have races you have to bet. Just I don't know why, but that's how it works. So at the NHC, I think there were, I think it was about half and half. I think 15 bets a day, 8 mandatory, 7 optional. So the optional means you can choose any race to bet those. The one at the Orleans is all optional. So you have 15 races a day to bet out of about 60 races total. I don't really have a preference one way or the other. I like having some optional and some mandatory, but all optional is better for me. But that's one of the biggest differences. I always read the rules, because I've seen people disqualified for, you know, making a mistake that they weren't aware of. For example, in cash tournaments, that one I mentioned at Keeneland, where you have to bet half your bankroll in the last race, there was a guy who would have won it easily a couple years ago and did end up with more money than anyone. But on the last race, he bet $200 less than half his bankroll by accident. You know, he's betting tens of thousands of dollars here, and he missed $200 somewhere and forfeited the first place prize money in the NHC seat because of that.
So wow.
The rules are very important, especially if you're going to a new format.
Now, on the NHC, that's a big one. You could win $800,000. How much homework are you doing before you get there, and how much do you have to do when you are there?
I make a concerted effort not to vary my strategy from every day from when I go to a tournament. So I don't do much beforehand, other than I'll do a little more work on track profile to see how the tracks are playing. I'll be looking at the weather earlier to make sure to know if there's a chance something will come off the turf or be canceled. But other than that, I do a little bit of work at night. And then the rest of it I do in the morning, just the way I normally would.
So, we have a lot of listeners that are always looking for opportunities of advantage play. How difficult do you think this is for someone to start, to get interested in and to start playing? Say, comparing it to if they were going to take up, playing poker tournaments instead.
You know, I'm not familiar with the value on everyday poker tournaments, because I haven't looked at them in so long. But it's not easy. It's there are a lot of people who have been kind of turned off by some of the things going on in the parimutuel pools with high takeout and small fields and that kind of stuff. And so a lot of people are focusing a lot more on contests. So you have, in the beginning, it was kind of easy pickings, but now it's getting quite difficult.
And that's true of horse racing in general too?
I think so. Yes. Horse racing doesn't do a great job bringing in new fresh blood. And so we end up with the best sticking around, you know?
Yeah. And do you focus on races with fewer horses or many horses? Or is that it's just wherever you find what you think is an overlay?
Well, that's certainly a factor for me. I like bigger fields. I bet a lot of big field turf races because that's where I can find the most value. It's harder to find value in a 6-horse field, just purely based on the numbers. So, yeah, I look for big fields, and I avoid anything under 5 for sure. I barely look at any 5-horse fields. 6 is about where I start getting interested.
Unless a 5-horse game was mandatory, then you...
Then I look at the 5-horse field, yeah.
Now, in many gambling tournaments, the correct strategy is either to win or to go broke trying. Doesn't sound like you bet all your money on the last hand or the last race in these tournaments you're playing. Is that, do I have that correct?
In mythical tournaments, no, because you don't have any money. But in cash tournaments, yes. The Breeders' Cup, for example, people, I personally and many other people bet their whole bankroll on the last race in an effort to move up or to win the whole thing. And quite often the winner bets their whole bankroll and hits. So in cash tournaments, that is definitely the strategy. You should, if you're going for the win, you will end up broke more times than you're going to win. You can't be afraid of that. It just happens.
Well, the other thing that happens in tournaments is that you often want to have a lead going into the end and then try to correlate with the other people that have a chance to catch you, right? So if you bet the same thing they bet, then it doesn't matter if you both win or lose. You're still going to be ahead of them.
Right.
But I don't know if that's going to apply in horse racing where people can be betting on long shots and have other ways of catching you.
Well, it certainly does. That kind of, you have to be able to do that math and say, who can beat me? What horses can they beat me with? And how likely are they to choose each horse? And then, and then try and block if that's the prudent strategy.
Are you allowed to bet on more than one horse in a race?
Not in mythical tournaments, no.
But in the cash tournaments?
Yeah, in cash tournaments, I mean, yeah, you can bet whatever you want within the rules of these are the bets you can make.
Right, like in craps tournaments, often you can get down to the end and, cover many of the 36 combinations as hop bets, right? You can figure out, I can lock up 24 out of the 36 numbers and win if any of those 24 or something like that. So I would think if they allow you to bet different amounts on multiple horses, you might be able to sort of lock in the same thing.
Yeah, you could Dutch and lock in a profit. You're not going to be able to guarantee, unless you have a big, very big lead, you're not going to be able to guarantee no one can catch you. That's the big question there. So most people in that last race bet who they like, and they're confident enough in their opinion to have got to that point. So they're going to bet who they like, and they're going to live or die by that horse.
It's not like that you bet in order, like somebody has the button and you get to see what they bet before you bet.
No, everybody bets whatever they want, and then the race runs. And so you never know what the other people have.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, see, in a craps tournament,
you just know when you see the total afterwards.
Right. Do you have to worry about people sort of trying to scope you out? Bill Belichick you with the binoculars and see what your bets are? And
I've seen some of that before.
I would think. I mean, there's a lot of money at risk.
Yeah, I know people that follow people on Twitter, or they'll look at other contests that are going on online that day to see what they picked. And I'm sure there's some people that get an edge by doing that. It's not part of my game, but yeah, I'm sure it happens.
Yeah.
If Richard and I each had an entry and you had one entry, could we use collusion between Richard and me to give us an edge over you in this tournament?
Well, you could certainly give yourself an edge by playing together, yes. And the way you do that is you spread, especially earlier in the day, like I was saying, you spread between multiple price horses so that if one of them hits, you have it on one of your tickets, whereas I can only play one of the price horses. And that also happens. There are people with multiple entries. There are people playing as teams. There are husband, wife, daughter, grandfather. There's all sorts of that kind of stuff. I don't mind that at all. I think it is an edge, but yeah, we all find ways to get our own edge.
So it's not prohibited to show somebody else your picks.
No. I mean, I'd say it's probably split about 50-50, people that really frown on it and people that really don't care. I'm on the don't care side.
sounds like there isn't anybody really doing it like professionally. You know what I mean? Like a team. I think you would care if there were four guys like yourself that were all working together on four different tickets.
Yeah, well, I think there are some. I'm not going to say any names, but there are definitely some people that do that, and they have more success than you would expect. Yeah. But they're also, you also have to look at it and think, you know, if they have four entries into this, two for them and two for someone else, they spent four times as much money as most people, and probably more. So they're feeding the pools as well. So I think it kind of works out.
I have a friend who regularly enters table game tournaments, and there's some other players he respects on the, we'll call it table game tournament circuit, and they pool their results. I don't think they collude during the tournaments, but they pool their results. So if any one of them wins, they all share.
Okay.
Is that kind of thing done very often in horse racing tournaments?
Yeah, I think it's another thing that I don't think people feel very comfortable talking about, but there are all sorts of fractional deals. People that say, you know, give me 25% of your ticket, I'll take 25% of yours, or people that buy part of someone's ticket and buy a percentage. So that happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, tournaments are a really high variance activity. Yeah. So yeah. They want to lower their variance, but certainly in the table games tournaments I've played in, there were definitely these groups of people that had deals, and there absolutely was collusion going on, and it's really hard to overcome in, you know, say a baccarat tournament where they can have one guy betting on player and the other betting on banker. You know, you're kind of screwed.
That's tough. Horse racing is a little different in that you can cover more possibilities, like I was saying with the long shots, but it's not like.
And it helps that they can't see what your bets are.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. You can't ship them your money. Like, I can't say, well, here's my bankroll to add to yours. You can't do that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think it's a little cleaner in horse racing than in some of the other competitions.
Yeah, and in these cash tournaments, you can bet exactas and trifectas and everything?
Yeah, again, it varies by the tournament, but yes, usually you can play win place, sometimes show, almost always exacta, and usually trifecta.
Huh.
Now, you mentioned earlier online tournaments. Are there online tournaments that American players can legally and easily enter?
Yeah, and about a year ago, it was a lot easier, but then contests started taking off, and then a lot of the state jurisdictions started banning contest sites. So it's legal federally, it's legal in the majority of states, but a lot of states have been cut off and can't play contests or sweepstakes type things, or you know, it's. It's really screwed up, but there in most states, yes, you can play all sorts of online tournaments for free.
And how are those tournaments differ than tournaments you play in a casino or at a track?
Well, they're almost all mandatory because the technology is much cleaner to do. Here's your 12 races in the contest. Everybody pick your horses. Though there's one site that has done optional tournaments, which is pretty cool. Other than that, it's the same people. It's the same, probably less takeout than most contests. And it's the same scoring. It's pretty much the same.
I just have a question. What is PWG? Do you have any idea what that? We just got a tweet in from Dink. He says, "Good man, smart, interesting friend, likes PWG."
Oh, that's what's it called? Professional Wrestling Gorillas, I think it is. So Dink took me to a pro wrestling show in some some shady looking spot in California, and it was a blast. I had an absolute blast. It was, I've never seen anything like it. I've never been a pro wrestling fan, but he convinced me to go, and I went, and I did not regret it.
Well, he's on the show in 2 weeks, so we'll be sure to ask him about that.
Oh, he'll be able to tell you all about it. He's like number one fan. It's pretty amazing.
For those of you who have no idea who Dink is, he was one of the characters in Beth Raymore's semi-fictional autobiography called Lay the Favorite. It was a movie with
Bruce Willis played Dink.
Bruce Willis played Dink, although Dink was quite amazed that they got Bruce Willis to play him. And either more amazed that Catherine Zeta-Jones was his wife. But, anyway, Dink sounds like a colorful guy. I'm looking forward to that.
He is. You'll have a blast.
We've had several shows on Daily Fantasy Sports. Is horse racing at all ever one of the Daily Fantasy Sports, and how does that work?
You know, a lot of horse racing sites have tried to duplicate fantasy, but I haven't seen fantasy sites bringing horse racing in. So, you know, I don't think – I love people that are looking into new ways of presenting it and, you know, bringing in different audiences. But I don't think it's very I don't think it's very conducive to the daily fantasy style where you'd have jockeys or trainers or barns or, you know, I don't know. I don't think it'll work too well, but I'm sure people are working on it right now, and I hope it's successful.
Yeah. I really agree that they've done the horse racing industry has kind of done a really poor job of getting people interested and excited about horse racing.
It's a shame. I mean, a lot more now, they're going after younger people, and that's good. But I think there's some steps that need to happen before you bring people to the game, because when people go to a Saturday afternoon at Del Mar, well, they're going to love it. It's going to be a blast. But what you're trying to get is the people who are going to be betting Mountaineer on a Tuesday night. You know, you need those people too. And I think there's a lot of crossover if we can make the game a bit more attractive to these people that are looking for value bets.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, maybe some of the individual tracks are trying to bring people in, but the casinos here don't seem to be doing anything to try to bring anybody in, you know?
It's amazing. The casinos don't really – they care about racing on the big days, on the Breeders' Cup and the Derby, and that's the Belmont Stakes sometimes if there's a horse alive. And yeah, it's
I talked to a friend recently where they're just taking the sports book, I mean the race book, out of their casino completely. They're just shutting it down. They
wow.
feel like you know, they can make more money per square foot by yep. filling it with slot machines or whatever.
You know, I can't argue with that business decision. It makes sense to me. I think it's too bad. I think it's a great game. It has the advantage of being legal in most every state, which not many games can say. So I wish we'd do a little more to get it out there and help the popularity.
Do players in tournaments ever go on tilt, and is that a factor?
Yeah, and this is something I see when I'm at live tournaments. I see it every single tournament. I see people that a big price will win, and they'll have looked at the horse and thought about the horse and decided to go with another one. And they play that what if game, and they say, oh, if I had that $64 on my total, I would have this much. And it colors the whole rest of their tournament, and it colors the choices they make in the future. They might start firing away on horses that don't have a chance rather than sticking to their plan. They might just blow their targets out and say, well, someone hit a cap horse, so the scores are going to go up, and forget about their targets. To me, I call it going on tilt, because their game plan was A, and now they're doing B. So that's something I've always focused really heavily on. It's something where I give myself about 30 seconds to say, damn, and then I turn the page, and I put it in my spreadsheet and I don't look at it again. That's over with. But I think a lot of horse players go on tilt in their daily wagering as well. As you see towards the end of the day, people start betting worse and worse depending on how they're doing. So I don't think it's a unique thing to contests.
You just mentioned targets. So do you set like there are blackjack tournaments where rather than, you know, two people from every table advance, they'll have, you know, the top seven players, whoever has the biggest bankrolls, you know, sure, those people will advance and you don't know where they are. So people set targets to try to hit them, figuring if I can hit this target, then I'll get into the next round. So is that what you're talking about? Is that what you do?
Yes, that's exactly what I do. I have a target for daily and I have a target for overall. And that helps because I know if I miss the first, you know, 25% of my races, that's all right. I know the average I'm going to need going forward. And then if I miss the first 50% of my races, then I need to raise the average I need each race. But it helps me stay calm because, you know, that target's going to be in reach until it's not. And when it's not, then, well, your strategy has to change anyways.
Right. Makes sense.
Wow. So your plan B, plan C, plan D pretty much stays the same from tournament to tournament. If you get so far behind or so far ahead, you change in a way that's predictable to you every tournament. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And I, you know, each person probably, people probably have different targets that they set. I usually go a little higher than what the average has won it before. I usually add some to it because I like to be safe. But I would say most people are pretty close, you know, within 10% of each other on their targets if they use a target and stick to it.
All right. So we're talking to Charlie Walker on
Davis.
Charlie Davis. Oh, thank you. Sorry. And we're going to do a few commercials now, and then we're going to come back and ask Charlie some more questions, if Richard thinks of any. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Big promotion of this month is $600,000 March Money Madness. At all times, there's casino-wide progressive with a value that grows from a reset value of $10,000 up until whenever it was hit, which must be before $25,000. One lucky player gets the prize. Everybody else with the player's card inserted when it goes off receives $25 in free play. As soon as the jackpot's hit, another one begins immediately at $10,000. This will continue until 3 a.m. April Fool's Day, after which time whatever progressive is in progress will go until it hits, and then it'll be over. Another minor progressive is also running from 1,000 to 2,500. This goes off three times a day on average. Only one who hits it gets it. Other people do not get any extra money. Double points this Thursday, St. Patrick's Day, 24/7, all machines, all video poker machines, slot machines get more, no limits. Free video poker class this week. If you're listening live, it means tomorrow, it's NSU Deuces Wild. This is a 99.73 game that's positive 24/7 at the South Point because they have a 0.30 slot club. And they also have mailers and promotions and double points this week. So, so much the better. It's a game with a nice combination of being easy to learn and relatively high paying. Plus, there are many players, including me, who believe the Deuces Wild games are simply more fun to play than most other video poker games. At the Palms, from now until the end of April, they have drawings every Friday and Saturday night, 7:15. Must be present to win. Five winners, top prize $2,500, total prize $5,000. All five of those winners get a chance to win $1 million in the Million Dollar Match game. PFP, play for prizes. until this Friday, March 18th, you earn Albertsons gift cards. The next 2 weeks, it's redeemed for cash. The rate is 0.2% up to $190 per day, Monday through Friday. You keep your points. There are two multiplier Wednesdays in March, 16th tomorrow, so that means starting at midnight tonight, and the 30th. Video poker players receive a minimum and maximum of 2x and a maximum bonus of 40,000 points. These two multiplier days earn the normal PFP prices as well. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most games. The game of the week is 10-play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10-coin per line game where periodically you receive Dream Card as your fifth card. This turns into the highest valued card still remaining in the 48 undealt cards. If you disagree with the machine's choice of a Dream Card, it's easy to change it to whatever you like. Playing Dream Card adds a small amount of EV and a whole lot of variance. You get a lot more royals, you get a lot more four aces when you have that Dream Card to deal with. And so since the EV only goes up a little bit, you get a lot more zeros in there too. So, part of the good news about the game is you do not have to change your strategy. If you know, for example, bonus poker perfectly, then you also know bonus poker Dream Card perfectly. All right, our guests next week, Jeffrey Compton and Anthony Curtis. And it'll be a roundtable discussion on what's happening in the gambling world. And in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to Dink, who has a real name. So you have a question for Charlie?
I do, yeah. So last time you were here, you mentioned Barry Meadows' book as a really good book for people interested in learning about how to beat horse racing. I've forgotten the title now.
Yeah, it's something like Money
Secrets at the Racetrack.
Yeah, Money Secrets at the Track.
Yeah, but so are there any books on horse racing handicapping tournaments?
Yeah, Peter, I think it's pronounced Fornadale, wrote a book that has.
I hear you madly Googling away.
Yeah,
there.
I am.
Part of that is me.
He has interviews with all the big players. And all the successful players, and I can't find. I have it. It's upstairs in my bookshelf. But
okay, how do you spell his last name?
Fornedale.
Okay, all right. So if listeners are interested, they can just Google him and find his book.
Yep. It's got contest in the title, so. It's really a good book. It's got a lot of interviews, and the players go into their strategies, their successes and failures, preparation, and it's all people that have won money on the circuit. So it's a good book. That's really the only one I know for contest players.
Yeah, it's sort of the same in table games. I mean, Stanford Wong wrote one that kind of owned the market. He was the only one. So is there anything that we're not asking you that we should be asking you about these tournaments? Anything that we've left out?
No, just if you're interested, for your listeners, if you're interested in playing in handicapping contests, if you're not next to a racetrack or in Vegas, then go to the websites and look. There's three big contest sites that have daily games of various amounts and various entry fees. There's Derby Wars, Horse Players Qualify, and Horse Tourneys. And those are really the three big ones. And, just check them out. And if you don't get in over your head, just like with poker, when a lot of people when poker started would play way above their head, don't do that. Play your comfort level and see if it's something that works for you. I know a lot of good handicappers that don't play contests because it just doesn't work for them. So it's not for everyone.
Now, when you were on our show last July, you said you were on the board of HANA, which is a organization of horse players.
Yeah.
No.
We're actually just getting ready in less than a month to come out with our updated 2016 track ratings. And that's kind of what we're known for. Every year we put out a sheet that shows the takeout on each bet for each track, their average pool sizes in the straight bets and the exotic bets, how to contact them, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the player can be educated where they're putting their money and know if they're, instead of thinking, well, this pays light, they'll know, hey, that's a 25% takeout. I should probably find one at 10 or 15.
And where do you put this out?
It's on horseplayersassociation.org or just Google HANA takeout ratings. That's what we're known for. So, and it'll come out in our April edition of our newsletter.
And this is free for anybody who wants, or is there a subscription?
No, it's free. It's just it's free. You don't even have to log in or anything. We just wanted everybody to know, and we especially wanted the industry to know what the takeout rates were and where the value was, and you can see why the handle goes to certain tracks.
Ah.
Are there any other, like, are there columnists on that website who have interesting information for horse players or tournaments or both?
Yeah, there's one of my fellow board members named Dean Towers, and he goes by Pull the Pocket on the internet, and he has a fantastic blog that deals with all sorts of horse racing issues, as well as he's a guy who bets on politics and sports, and so he has some pretty interesting takes, and I'd recommend people check that one out.
All right, great. Well, we've been talking with Charlie Davis today. Thank you very much, Charlie. Very informative, as always.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay. We welcome your questions. Please send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can even tweet them at us during the show, the way Dink did today. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week. Just sign up for that at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. Or to find an archive of all the old shows, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
We have about 30 seconds left, and I have a 30-second question for Richard that he doesn't know is coming. You tweeted about some people in casinos put GPS on the bottom of cars to find out where gamblers live.
And yeah, somebody got robbed.
So how do you protect yourself about that in 10 seconds?
Boy, you just got to be really careful going from your, you know, when you leave the casino that nobody's following you and going from the car to the door. They had big problems with that in the card rooms in California. Several people were murdered. That was quite a few years back. But anyway, yeah, just be careful out there.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Charlie. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.